It's about 2 o'clock. Everybody ready to proceed?
No, that was a really good game. The round snakes are all safe now. All on the...
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, good afternoon. It is Thursday, November 6th, 2025. We are here for two land use hearings. The first hearing is AR 25-015. We have the two cases. The first one is going to be the application of Remington BESS. Do we say BESS or BESS?
Best,
okay. LLC, on behalf of Niels Paul Jensen and Ima L. Jensen Revocable Trust. If you have not done so, please sign in and give me your mailing address if you plan to testify or you'd like a copy of the decision. There's two separate sign-in sheets for the two separate matters, so make sure you sign in the correct sheet. I'm going to go over the procedures to begin. Talk about the nature of the case. We'll hear any preliminary objections. Summarize the material in the case file. Planning Division will present its staff report. Applicant or representative will present its case. We'll hear any testimony in favor of the application, then any testimony in opposition to the application. If anyone would like to present general comments, not for or against, but be heard on the matter, they will have an opportunity to testify. The applicant will have an opportunity for rebuttal as they have the burden of proof in land use cases. We will then close the hearing unless there is a request to continue the hearing or to keep the record open. No decision will be made at the hearing. My decision will be in writing, and a copy of the decision will be sent to the applicant, interested parties, affected governmental agencies, and anyone else who requests a copy. We are recording the hearing today. Testimony is taken from tables up front and will be under oath or affirmation. The recording will become a part of the official record. The record in this case is a public record. Any documents that are submitted become part of the record and generally cannot be returned. If you have any documents you'd like to submit to the record, please let the other party take a look at them, then hand them to us, and we will mark them as exhibits and make them a part of the official record. The failure of an issue to be raised in a hearing in person or by letter, or failure to provide statements or evidence sufficient to afford the decision maker an opportunity to respond to the issue, may preclude an appeal based on that issue and may preclude it from being raised at a later time. ORS 197.7633. Failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to a proposed condition of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the local government or its designee to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in a circuit court. For a condition of approval to apply, it must be stated with sufficient specificity to enable the applicant to respond to the condition prior to the close of the final local hearing, ORS 197.7963. I've had no ex parte contact in this matter. I mean, I haven't had any communication with either the hearings office or the applicant about the subject matter outside of the case file and any supplement documents that have been sent to me. We are here on the application of REMBESS LLC on behalf of the Niels Paul Jensen and Ima L. Jensen Joint Revocable Trust. It's AR 25-015. I'm not sure if I said it. My name is Jill Foster, Mary County Hearings Officer. This matter before the Hearings Officer is an administrative review to construct a battery energy storage system as a utility facility necessary for public service on a 46.35-acre parcel located in the 5200 block of Pearson Road, Southeast Turner, Oregon. Before I summarize the material in the case file, I'll ask the parties if there are any preliminary objections to notice, jurisdiction, or conflict of interest. Mr. Speckman?
Nope.
And the applicant?
None.
Thank you. The case file in this matter contains the application and the applicant's statement. It includes supporting documents such as the deed, Secretary of State printout for the entity, Marion County Commissioner's statements and provisions of the Marion County Code on battery energy storage systems, a legislative amendment, ordinance number 1480, site plan, zoning map, notice of decision, addresses for notice and hearing notice. There is the notice of appeal and request for hearing, comments submitted from the Friends of Marion County with exhibit, Marion County Public Works memorandum, request for comments and then comments that were submitted, a battery energy storage system mitigation sheet and then the applicant's pre-hearing brief that included exhibits and attachments to that. This complete file will be made a part of the record. All testimony should be directed to the subject matter of this case. The laws and provisions applicable to this case are found in Marion County Code 17.136, exclusive farm use zone. Those are the Marion County criteria that I believe apply. If there are other criteria that you believe apply, of course, including state statutes, but please let me know if there's other things that I should consider. Any procedural questions before we begin?
Nope.
Okay, thank you. Then we will begin with Planning Division. Mr. Speckman, please state your name, spell your last name for the record, and provide your mailing address.
John Speckman, S-P-E-C-K-M-A-N. Mailing address is 5155 Silverton Road, Northeast, Salem, Oregon, 97305.
Thank you. Please proceed.
For the record, this is John Speckman with Marion County Planning. And at the onset, there were three submissions after the case file was brought down to, or after we brought the case file down to the hearings officer. The first was received on October 31st. It is the pre-hearing brief along with an appendix and 22 exhibits. This was provided electronically. Yesterday, we received testimony from John J. Audley in support of AR 2515, and we received testimony in opposition from San Am Water Control District. And I'm gonna provide all these physically to the hearings officer now.
Okay. So just for the record, this is the submission. The brief with appendix is included in the record, and I have not seen these two yet. So are those considered part of the record, or are they considered exhibits?
We would consider them part of the record. We're calling them pre-hearing exhibits 2 and 3.
Okay. Mark them as such.
And staff has copies here if anybody would like to see them, and digital copies are available on the public hearings website.
San Antonio Water Control is 3, and testimony from John J. Audley is pre-hearing submission 2?
2, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The application before you today is for a battery energy storage system applied for as a utility facility necessary for public service on a 15-acre portion of a 133.77-acre parcel located in the 5200 block of Pearson Road Southeast, Turner. Surrounding uses are agricultural and rural residential. The criteria for this application to be met do not exist within Marion County Code. The application submitted included responses to the criteria in Marion County Code 17-136-40I for a utility facility necessary for public service. On April 15, 2025, the Marion County Board of Commissioners held a work session to discuss battery energy storage systems, or BESS. These systems are not expressly contemplated in the county zoning code, state statute, or state administrative rule. The Marion County Board of Commissioners determined that BESS are not utility facility necessary for public service, as found in Marion County Code 17-136-40I, and that furthermore, there is no use identified in Marion County Code that a BESS could fall under. Therefore, BESS are not permitted in any zone within Marion County. The board expressed a desire to clarify the applicability of existing code to this use, and on May 14th, 2025, initiated a process to consider code amendments. On June 11th, 2025, the board held a hearing to consider amendments to clarify existing code provisions related to BESS in Marion County Urban and Rural Zone Codes, Chapters 16 and 17. At this public hearing, held June 11, 2025, the Marion County Board of Commissioners clarified the county's interpretation on the record that battery energy storage systems are not utility facilities necessary for public service. The Marion County Board of Commissioners signed Ordinance 1480 on July 9, 2025, in order to add clarifying sections of text to chapters 16 and 17 of the Marion County Code that outright prohibit BESSs. These sections of code were added for clarification only because BESSs were not permitted under any section of code prior to July 9th, 2025. Ordinance 1480 does not apply to this application because it was signed into code after the application was submitted. The applicant was made aware of the county's determination, but still chose to apply for an administrative review to construct a BESS under the erroneous classification of a utility facility necessary for public service. The application was submitted on June 30th, 2025, after the county's interpretation was already on record. BESS are not necessary for public service, as evidenced by the pre-existing public service of electric utilities. While BESS is not a utility facility necessary for public service, staff considered how the application addressed the criteria for utility facility necessary for public service and found that this proposal does not meet those criteria. Staff is in the process of writing potential BESS code that addresses the unique nature of these facilities. There's currently no way to approve a battery energy storage system in Marion County, and therefore the application must be denied. And I will stand for any questions you may have.
Probably will, but not yet.
Right on.
Thank you. And are you Ms. Thompson? No.
I'm Mr. Thomas.
Oh, Mr. Thomas. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And and you are an Oregon State Attorney, so I'm not going to swear you in.
Correct.
And just in your name.
My name is Christina.
Okay. And are you counsel as well? All right, please proceed.
Good afternoon, Hearings Officer Foster. My name is Ryan Thomas. I'm a partner at Perkins Coie, and we represent the applicant, Remington Best LLC. I anticipate their presentation will be about 20 or maybe 30 minutes. After my remarks, you'll hear from Christina, who's going to talk about the project purpose and scope, as well as some specific site selection processes and details about the alternative analysis that we provided as Appendix A. Also speak to the safety record with BESS and the safety standards that would apply to this project. We have a few other RWE technical experts that are here in the gallery should there be any questions. They include Ethan Westcott, who's the director of BESS projects and project engineering, and Justin Bieber, who's a principal at Energy Strategies, who can speak to interconnection and transmission issues, and Neha Jain, who's a battery design engineer and can speak to technical and safety issues. I don't anticipate them to provide testimony unless there are specific questions that they could help answer. And I want to note that RWE is the parent company of Remington Best LLC. My presentation, I'm going to address three topics. First, I want to speak to the statutory framework that applies here. That's ORS 215-283 and ORS 215-275. And I'll describe why Best is a utility facility that's necessary for public service. Second, I'll speak to why the local requirements, including the ordinance banning Best, cannot apply here. Only the statutory framework controls, and that comes from the Brent Marr v. Jackson case, and ORS 215-296. Finally, I'll close by speaking briefly to conditions of approval. Please interrupt me at any point if you have questions.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, first, the statutory framework, and the key inquiry here is whether BESS is a utility facility that's necessary for public service. There are two statutes that are at the heart of this case, ORS 215-283-1 and ORS 215-275. 283 sub 1 says that utility facilities necessary for public service can be sited on EFU land. 215-275 provides the test to determine whether a utility facility is necessary for public service. So first, I'll talk about why BESS is a utility facility. Oregon courts broadly define utility facility to mean equipment or apparatus, whether standing alone or as part of a structure, that functions to perform or provide in whole or in part a service such as the production, transmission, delivery, or furnishing of electricity. That's a quote from Cox v. Polk County. BESS is an increasingly critical component of an established utility structure, here at PacifiCorp, and it furnishes renewable electricity to the public when it's needed most. Examples of utility facilities and cases in the legislative history include things such as radio towers, cell towers, transmission lines, and substations. Legislative history and interpreting case law includes broad statements such as the following, which show the general and open nature of the term utility facility. Utility facilities intended to capture, quote, such things as power substations or transformer substations and so on. That's from a 1963 House committee hearing. That same committee hearing, I believe it was the same committee hearing, maybe cell towers, sewer lines, and booster stations. And ORS 215-283-1 is a, quote, general category for utility facilities. That's from Save Our Rural Oregon versus FSEC. BESS is a modern technology that's essential for today's energy grid and serves to function much like a substation or a booster station. I want to read a quote from House Bill 2193 committee summary that I think captures well why BESS is so critical in today's energy grid. Quote, one of the distinctive characteristics of the electric power sector is that the amount of electricity that can be generated is relatively fixed over short periods of time, although demand for electricity fluctuates throughout the day. Electricity storage devices can manage the amount of power required to supply customers at times when need is greatest, which is during the peak load. Many renewable sources, most notably solar and wind, produce intermittent power. Energy storage is one option to provide more reliable energy supplies. State and utilities alike acknowledge that BESS are necessary components of providing electrical service and integrating renewable resources into the grid to meet the state's clean energy goals and mandates. I want to highlight just a couple of those state laws that reflect this. House Bill 2193 required electrical companies to acquire storage systems like BESS. That was on the books, I believe, in 2015. House Bill 2021, which is more recent, requires significant emissions reductions, and the Department of Energy's resulting energy strategy calls for significant investment in battery storage to accomplish those targets. Utilities in their planning documents are setting specific targets for battery storage because they recognize that's necessary to implement these significant reductions. For example, and we provide this in the record, PacifiCorp's Integrated Resource Plan, which is their document that guides how they're going to meet the demand they anticipate with the resources and it results in them needing to acquire new resources. That document and the associated Clean Energy Plan identify significant requirements to purchase or develop battery storage. Both of those documents are reviewed and approved by the Public Utility Commission. It's part of a robust process. Coming out of the IRP is an RFP. So Integrated Resource Plan says, here's all the demand, here's how PacifiCorp intends to achieve it. The RFP then is the specific request for proposals for how those energy needs are going to be met. And that's what this project is responding to. It's responding to PacifiCorp's RFP, identifying a need, and this 200 megawatt BESS project will respond to that need. We also know from established case law that the utility facility allowed on EFU lands under 283.1 is not limited to facilities provide service to the local residents alone, but also includes intra and interstate facilities. That's from McLaughlin versus Douglas County. BESS serve critical public utility functions and fits squarely within the term of utility facility under 283.1. And this finding is supported by the legislative intent for this flexible category of utility facilities that includes things like radio towers, cell towers, and substations. And this finding is also necessary based on the nature of today's grid, which requires storage to deliver power from alternative energy sources. The sun's not shining, and when the wind's not blowing, this battery then discharges power back to the grid. BESS are utility facilities. So once it's established that BESS is a utility facility, the question becomes whether Remington considered reasonable alternatives outside of EFU land, and here it did.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
How do you think about the Marion County Code 17.110584 definition? Do you need to consider that?
You know, we don't. I don't believe we do because here it's, and we'll get to this in a moment.
Okay.
But Brent Marvie Jackson says that those uses under 283.1 utility facilities necessary for public service, counties can't add to any legislative requirements there. So the ordinance can't ban them, it can't change them, it can't impose other additional requirements that would prevent BESS from being cited. So here, when we're talking about 283.1 use, I think we're limited to the statutory construction and interpreting case law.
But that code provision was pre-existing the ordinance, wasn't it?
I don't know that it's from a timing standpoint, and I guess I don't know when that was adopted, but if it were, I don't know that it's relevant for purposes of Brent Mar, because I don't think a county can adopt, even if it adopted it before the ordinance or the application. Brent Mar says you cannot add to the statutory requirements. So a local county can't say you actually need to do X, Y, and Z. It's limited. Brent Mar, and it says that 283.1 uses, not 283.2 uses, which are conditional uses, 283.1 utility facilities, those are uses as a matter of right.
Okay. Okay. I'm sure you'll do more in the Brent Moore analysis. Thank you.
So next, I want to speak to the alternatives analysis. So once we identify the best utility facility, the question is, did Remington consider reasonable alternatives? And we provided as Appendix A to the brief the alternatives analysis that Remington performed to evaluate sites. And to determine, this reasonable alternatives test, it provides six factors under 275.2, and the alternatives says you need to find one of those six factors to justify the site. Not all six, not more than one of them. They're all factors, they're not criteria. The court in Sprint v. Washington County said that the six factors in 275 are intended to provide a roadmap to courts and hearing officers for what they are to consider and what not to consider when defining necessity. That's Sprint at 476. Remington's application is based on the three factors in 270, the first three in 275, and those are technical and engineering feasibility, locational dependence, and the lack of available urban and non-resource lands. As I noted, it's important that not all six factors must be met, only one, and much of the county's denial suggests that the factors are criteria, but that's not the case. So the denial focuses on the life safety factor as well. I believe that's factor four. But that's not the basis of the Remington application. That factor says the utility facility must be placed on EFU land, but because doing so on other lands would prevent life and safety concerns. The county seemed to conflate that factor, suggesting that Remington had a positive obligation to demonstrate that putting BESS on EFU land would not present life safety concerns. And that's just not the right way to interpret it, and it's not the basis for the application. There are three key requirements of a or factors to consider when looking at the alternatives analysis. This comes from the Sprint case. First is that a utility's decision about its service needs should be respected, and a site that does not meet those needs is not a reasonable alternative, provided those objectives advance the goal of providing utility service. So when you review Appendix A, it identifies the business objectives for Remington as well as specific siting criteria. One of the key business objectives here is providing service to PacifiCorps. We noted that one of the commenters provided a map of substations for PG&E, but here those aren't relevant because the business objective is not to provide service to PG&E. When evaluating whether an alternative is reasonable, an applicant does not need to consider different methodologies. So the way that the battery is provided, that doesn't need to be second-guessed or reevaluated. That methodology is a part of the business case. Finally, only sites outside of EFU land must be considered. So if there were to be a better site within EFU land, that doesn't need to be considered. It's only outside of EFU. And again, those principles are all found in the Sprint case. Ms. Gisbert is going to get into detail about the project objectives and siting criteria, so I'm not going to get into those now. But she will provide additional detail, and that's fleshed out in Appendix A. The record and what you'll hear from Ms. Gisbert does include substantial evidence demonstrating that reasonable non-EFU alternatives to the current location were considered, but they were not feasible due to the siting constraints. One thing that the denial mentions is that cost was, I forget if it's a significant factor or sole factor. That's not the case. The 275 says that cost can be a factor so long as it's not the only factor. And no sites were eliminated based solely or primarily on fact that the threshold that Remington identified for a site, it's common for utility upgrades to be needed when you need to connect a BESS to the grid. The threshold for that becoming too expensive was $20 million in this case. And again, no site was that an issue or out and then eliminated the site. So in conclusion, the BESS is a utility facility and Remington provided substantial evidence in the alternatives analysis that considered non-EFU alternatives. None of those sites were reasonable due to technical and engineering feasibility, locational dependence, and lack of available resource lands. So that's the statutory framework. BESS utility facility necessary for public service. I do want to get into, and I think this was your question earlier, a bit more about the ordinance and why the local requirements don't control. Specifically, Ordinance 1480. I'm going to quote from Brent Maher. Under ORS 215-2831, the county may not enact or apply legislative criteria of its own that supplement those found in 215-2831. It goes on to say that those uses in also has a thorough description of the legislative history of 283.1 that we found very helpful for understanding how the legislature was thinking about utility facilities and what a county may or may not do with respect to those facilities. County's EFU zoning code cannot deviate from the statutory requirements in ways that conflict with the statute. And when they do, the statute controls and the offending ordinance provisions are void, according to Hansen and Riggs, both of which are cited. Here, the ordinance conflicts with 215.283.1, and it can't apply to utility facilities on EFU land, and it doesn't apply to this application. Even if the county did have the authority to enact this ordinance with respect to EFU land, the ban would still not apply to this application under Oregon's goalpost standard and the county's prior interpretation, because the standards that were in effect at the time of the application should apply, not those that were enacted after. Here, Remington applied on June 30th, and the ordinance was adopted on July 9th. I want to take a moment to describe some of the context around the adoption of Ordinance 14. In 2024, the county approved a similar BEST project called SWIFT, which RWE now owns. At that time, the county found BEST to be a utility facility necessary for public service, and that decision is Exhibit 13. That project serves PG&E. Prior to Remington's application for this project, Remington, the property owner, had been in regular communication with the Planning Division, who did not identify the proposed code amendment banning BEST. Remington did receive notice or didn't receive notice of the proposed ordinance, and based on email communications, justification was the ordinance would not affect the BEST project. Staff wrote, quote, "I did not provide notice of the hearing to you because the amendments won't affect the BEST already approved on your property," that's SWIFT, "nor the recent application for a BEST we received last week. The amendments only affect applications moving forward after July 9th. That's it." At the hearing before the Board of Commissioners on the ordinance adoption and prior to the adoption, RWE expressed concern about the ordinance affecting the Remington project. Response: Planning Division represented the ordinance would not affect the project, which appeared to address the board's concern. And I quote, "He, the landowner, also has an application in. We received it last week for different sites, and these amendments don't affect the application either. These amendments affect any application going forward, nothing that's currently in process." That was on July 9th, and then 11 days later, the application was 11 days after the application was submitted. And then 3 weeks later, it was denied based largely on that same ordinance. While the ordinance appears to be a driving factor in the denial, because the ordinance does not apply, cannot apply to EFU land under Brentmar, Hansen, and Riggs, it's an unlawful basis to deny the application. Okay, the last part here, I want to speak briefly to some conditions. Planning Division applied the farm impacts test in its denial, but by its own terms in the statute, this is ORS 215-296, it does not apply to uses under 283.1. It only applies to those under 283.2. Bases for any conditions here are found in ORS 215-275-5, which says that the county can impose conditions to minimize impacts, if any, on surrounding farm use in order to prevent a significant change and accepted farm practices or significant increase in the cost of farm practices on the surrounding farm. It does not require an affirmative showing. Instead, it's permissive and only applies if there's evidence of significant changes or significant increase in cost. And the record does not include substantial evidence showing either of those to be true. We actually have obtained and will provide here to staff and to the hearing officer a letter testimony from the farmer and owner of the 300 acres surrounding the project, who states that there would not be a significant change or increase in cost supportive of the project. And although this issue may be raised during testimony today, we don't expect any substantial evidence in the record will support a finding that the project will result in a significant change to farm practices or a significant increase in cost. There were suggested conditions by the Water Control District. Based on our reading of their comment letter, those appear to be based on an incorrect interpretation that conditional use criteria apply here. This is not a conditional use permit, and those criteria don't apply. And as noted before, the farm impacts test would not apply, and both of those appear to be a significant basis for their comments. Another basis for their comments appeared to be statewide planning goals, but those don't apply after acknowledgement by the county's comprehensive plan and control districts, proposed conditions be ignored. Existing water law and state water quality laws would address any water rights and water quality issues that are raised, including addressing stormwater discharge and the potential abandonment of any water rights at the location. Those would also be addressed by existing water law and not a condition. As shown in the site plan, the BEST project will have stormwater detention on site, and a further condition is not warranted. We don't think that there are conditions that are necessary to impose on this project based on the record before you, based on 5.5. But if the county were to find that conditions are appropriate here, we suggest that the conditions imposed by the county on the SWIFT project would be appropriate, as with conditions recommended by the Turner Fire District, the building department, and engineering staff, all of which the project would be complying with anyway. And regardless of what conditions are imposed, the project will comply with fire code requirements and other state requirements that would apply to this project. So, in sum, we respectfully request the county approve the application as a utility facility necessary for public service. Appreciate your attention, and unless there are any other questions, I'll turn it over to Christina.
Just clarify, I think it was your earlier answer. So the ordinance is one thing we focus on, but even if there were code provisions that prohibited it before, those are more restrictive than the statute and not permissible.
That's right, yeah.
I understood Mr. Speckman to say, the way we see it, it's not allowed anyway, and the ordinance just clarifies.
That's right. Yeah, I've heard that too, and we find that irrelevant under Brent Maher. The timing of it, even if we're on the books before, the county doesn't have the authority to impose additional restrictions on EFU land. Now, with respect to BESS on other land, the ordinance very well may stand. So we're narrowly looking at additional requirements on EFU land. And so with respect to utility facilities under 283.1, counties are very limited. In fact, they can't impose additional conditions that would prevent that use. There may be ancillary conditions, again, a building permit, typical things, access to the roadway. Those, of course, could be conditions on the use, but it cannot prohibit or outright ban on EFU land. That's within the control of the legislature.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
All right. Good afternoon. My name is Christina Gispert, and I serve as the Director of Development for the Remington Energy Storage Project here in Marion County.
Ms. Gispert, I think I'm supposed to swear you in, too. So, do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding will be true to the best of your knowledge?
I do.
Thank you. Please proceed.
I'm here today to discuss how RWE, as the parent company for Remington BESS LLC, selected the proposed site for its approximately 200-megawatt BESS facility. In my presentation, I'll provide you with background on the site selection process and discuss some of the siting criteria that led us to the site. I anticipate presenting for about 9 minutes, and I'm joined here today with four of my colleagues who can provide additional technical expertise for any questions you may have about the project. Battery energy storage systems are no longer optional for the modern grid. They function as core grid assets, similar to substations and transmission lines. They provide the flexibility and reliability needed for modern power systems. Here in the Willamette Valley, storage ensures continuous service by balancing supply and demand in real time. Without it, the grid risks instability and outages for our community. I'd like to also note that battery systems are roughly 100 times smaller in land footprint than a solar facility for the same megawatt rating. We understand, based on Pacific Power's documentation and its integrated resource plan, that the utility has identified a need for energy storage within the Pacific Power Willamette Valley service area. The integrated resources plan is a long-term planning document that electric utilities prepare to outline how they will meet future energy needs in a cost-effective, reliable, and sustainable way. In my professional experience, and of that of my colleagues, some of who've worked in the industry for over 40 years, none of us have successfully developed a power plant in this particular service area. It's been a goal of our company to have a presence here, but the opportunity has consistently eluded us due to the siting constraints discussed in our alternatives analysis. That's why we were thrilled to finally see a positive result in the first time of our careers that satisfies our siting criteria. This is a milestone for our business. Our goal is to build an approximately 200 megawatt energy storage facility in direct response to Pacific Power's integrated resource plan, which calls for 300 megawatts of energy storage within the Willamette Valley service area. We identified 200 megawatts as the optimal size to take advantage of the economies of scale and help reduce costs for ratepayers. I'd like to share how we determined that this particular EFU parcel next to the Parish Gap substation could deliver a positive outcome within the Willamette Valley service area. We prepared an alternatives analysis covering the entire Willamette Valley. This alternatives analysis was provided as part of the brief and here, and I want to highlight the siting criteria that we used in our process. The first thing we looked for was non-EFU lands that are within about 1 mile of a utility substation. Limiting it to 1 mile is important because it will reduce line losses. As you transmit power across the transmission line, you lose a little bit of power, and it also reduces the footprint of the facility and makes permitting possible because the longer the line, the more underlying encumbrances you have to cross. We also evaluated the voltage class and available transfer capacity for each substation. For a project that is 200 megawatts in size, the substation needs to be of a voltage class rating of 115 kilovolts. We were able to estimate the available transfer capacity by studying the Pacific Core queue, which shows all of the existing interconnection applications for each of the substations throughout their service area. We also looked at land size. We were looking for parcels that were about 15 acres in size. Our rule of thumb is 1 acre per 20 megawatts for energy storage, plus 2 acres for the substation. This gives us room for, you know, detention basins, access roads, buffers, anything we need to avoid on the ground. We evaluated the interconnection commercial operation date. When you make a filing with a balancing authority like PacifiCorp, they tell you what the soonest date is that you can become commercially operational. We needed that date to be no later than December 31st, 2029, so that we could respond to their current RFP. The RFP is a request for proposals, which is basically a request for potential power plants that could deliver on that COD, commercial operation date. We also estimated the network upgrade costs, and we can see that pretty clearly when you study the queue. The limit that we sought to stay within was $20 million. We found after doing the financial modeling for dozens of power plants, once you get above $20 million, the project won't pencil. The price per megawatt becomes so great that it's way out of market. No utility will be able to contract with you. You know, it would increase prices for ratepayers. And even if you were to get a contract, the Oregon PUC would deny the contract because their job is to also protect the ratepayer. So $20 million was the threshold. We looked at topography. We set the limit to be actually kind of on the high side, in my opinion. The slopes needed to be 15% or less. The batteries need to be very flat. They're heavy. They require robust foundations. But we need to look out for access to the site. Heavy equipment would be traveling those roads for construction and certainly for emergency services. So 15% slope was the limit. We took environmental considerations into account. We looked for wetlands, water features, other environmentally sensitive areas. We looked at the zoning for non-EFU lands. We needed to be sure that they allowed for industrial or utility facilities. And we also looked at underlying utility crossings to make sure that they weren't cumbersome. We tried to avoid crossing freeways or major gas transmission lines, things of those natures. So the results of this analysis sheds light on why none of our experienced developers have previously built in the Willamette Valley. Out of the 30 substations examined, only 6 met the voltage criteria and transfer capacity criteria. And after further review, none of the non-EFU lands for those 6 substations satisfy the siting requirements due to slopes, wetlands, zoning conflicts, or lack of proximity to the substation. From a land use perspective, the proposed Remington Energy Storage parcel, EFU parcel, is the only parcel we've seen that's suitable for this project. I wanted to make another statement on battery safety. RWE prides itself on the safety of its facilities. It's our most valued performance criteria in the company. We want to acknowledge the Turner Fire District's review and comments on our permit application, and we want to state that we intend to fully comply with all requests and requirements outlined in the fire department's correspondence, including all relevant federal and state fire codes. RWE is highly experienced in constructing and operating lithium-ion energy storage systems. Presently, we have 16 lithium-ion energy storage systems in operation and several others under construction. The safety of our battery systems and the surrounding community is our top priority. Our facilities use advanced fire detection, suppression, and monitoring technologies, and we are highly experienced in developing detailed emergency response plans and training first responders before the systems go online. We routinely update our safety protocols to meet the latest industry standards, and our systems are designed to detect and respond to issues quickly. While safety incidents are extremely rare, our best practices, design approach, and technology ensure that if a battery were to fail, it would fail safely, preserve as much of our facility as possible, and not impact the surrounding areas. To date, none of our 16 operational facilities have had a failure or major safety incident. At this point, I'm happy to offer my team to answer any questions about our project, so I'll turn it over to you. Thank you.
Do you feel that your team's their statements are all well supported in the record that's been submitted?
I think so. If you had any like specific questions about technology, or if you're curious about that sort of thing, then absolutely. That's your opportunity to satisfy that curiosity.
Right. Sure. Right. Yeah. I just want to make sure that all their positions are fully included in the record. So if there's any testimony that you think may not be in their submissions that you want for the record, I think it would be appropriate.
We have some additional written testimony from the Fire and Life Safety that we're happy to submit during this hearing. But as far as oral testimony goes, I think they're here more to respond to any questions, but we don't need them to affirmatively offer anything.
Okay. I don't think I have specific questions because I think just learning about it through their submissions provided me plenty of reading material, correct. And each reading material leads to more reading material that I learned. Okay. So nobody else you need to have affirmative testimony?
No, that concludes our testimony. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Speckman, do you want to be heard on the issue of the ordinance versus the code as it already was on that issue and explain anything about, I think it's 24009, was it a 2004 administrative review with a finding on a BESS storage system?
Yeah, I can go into the background there a little bit. That was approved under the idea that these were utility facilities necessary for public service. Some point between then and this application is when we spoke with, I believe it was Alexander Thompson, and we expressed that this is what the county considers them, utility facilities necessary for public service. During that period of time, we received several questions from different companies about these facilities, and when that happened, we decided to go to the board and say, these are coming in, what do you guys think? Because of Marion County's stance on solar facilities, we have some of the best farmland in the country, period. We were concerned about commercial operations building on that land with very little criteria, and wanted to make sure that the board agreed with what we were calling these things, because the implication of approving several won't become apparent for 5 to 10 years. The board determined that they are not utility facilities necessary for public service because they fall somewhere between a substation and a field of solar panels. It's not something that the utility is putting in. It's something the utility is saying they can use in the same way that they can use solar panels and other types of natural renewable generation. And Marion County's stance is not that BESS are somehow wrong, but that there should be specific criteria. And that is a stance that many counties throughout California and Washington are taking, and a lot of them are just now adopting their code to allow these facilities while taking into account that it is this new territory. It's not power generation, but it is, you know, buying low and selling high of power attached to a substation, providing the service of constant energy and being able to preserve the power generated when the sun is out. But at any rate, our position is that the board made this interpretation. It was our job to follow through with that interpretation, and the board has the right to interpret uses if the legislature and DLCD has not already interpreted them. We think that it's likely that that will happen at some point in the near future. But in the meantime, we have started the process for creating code, and we would call it a conditional use because we don't think it falls under those that section one of 215-283. Already in that section, it does call, in our interpretation, it does not refer to it as a farm impacts test, but 215-275-5 talks about ensuring that the utility facilities necessary for public service do not cause significant change in cost or change in farm practices. And so in our code, instead of summarizing that section, we reference back to the code section under conditional uses that implements the farm impacts test. So we believe that is just a way to show that, to include that criteria. As far as the ordinance and some of those emails submitted in the exhibit, I can understand how that can be confusing, but what the planning director seemed to be referencing was the fact that the applicant had been told in early June this happened. The Board of Commissioners interpreted them not as a utility facility necessary for public service. We will deny any application that comes in. This was made very aware to the applicant prior to the hearing where that ordinance was adopted. And so it's clarified again at the hearing, this does not affect the application that's come in. Not to say this application is going to be approved, but rather that it is separate from the ordinance. The reason for denial has nothing to do with the ordinance. It has to do with the county's authority to interpret a use that has not been interpreted by any other authority at this point.
Officer Foster,
yes.
I'd love to respond to a couple of those
yes.
points. Is now appropriate?
Now is a great time.
Okay, great. Just three points briefly. The county absolutely gets to establish criteria and standards for BESS, just not on EFU land. Brent versus Washington County describes it's 275 that controls with respect to utility facilities on EFU land. So we don't take any issue with the county's desire to regulate, provide some standards for, potentially in some zones, prohibit, and think it's likely within its rights to do so, just not on EFU. So that's the difference here. Second point, the standard, the test in 275.5 about impacts is actually quite different from the farm impacts test. I understand that it seems pretty similar. I'd like to read it briefly. It doesn't put an affirmative obligation onto an applicant to demonstrate that there are impacts. It's, as I noted in my presentation, it's permissive and it would allow the county to impose conditions if there are impacts. So here it says, I quote, the governing body of the county or its designee shall impose clear or objective conditions on an applicant for utility facility under 283.1 to mitigate and minimize the impacts of the proposed facility, if any, on surrounding lands devoted to the farm use in order to prevent significant change in accepted farm practices or significant increase in the cost of farm practices on surrounding farmlands. So if there are any impacts, then there shall be conditions to address those. And then it's limited to significant change in farm practices or significant increase in the cost. And we'll provide a letter from the landowner with 300 acres around the facility saying he supports the project. So I just wanted to highlight that distinction between the farm impacts test.
We're not doing a traditional farm impacts test. We're saying if there are impacts, you need to address them.
That's right. And if they're not just any impacts, also limited to significant change in farm practices or significant increase in costs. So I understand they're similar, but they are distinct, and I think that's an important point. With respect to the emails and what was stated at the Board of Commissioners hearing on the adoption, I think the record speaks for itself there. I encourage you to go look at those communications and the transcript of that hearing. They sure read to us and felt to us like there was a representation that this application will not be affected. And of course, I cannot speak for the Board of County Commissioners. It seemed to alleviate a concern of the board when the director stated that the applications into the county would not be affected by this ordinance. And he stated that applications coming in after the adoption would be affected, not those already in. So, but I encourage you to review the record on that point.
What's your response to Mr. Speckman saying it wasn't just based on that ordinance? It's an interpretation of pre-existing code provisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think if we assume that that's correct, so let's say that the county said, this ordinance is clarifying, notwithstanding SWIFT, we've understood that BESS are not, utility facilities are not permitted. They still run into Brent Mar trouble. I think they can't do that on EFU land. That may well be the case in other zones, and I think could do that, but they run afoul of Brent Mar. And the fact that 283.1 uses are a matter of right on EFU land. The 283.2 uses, those are conditional, even on EFU land. So we're really talking about 283.1 use, utility facility. The county just doesn't get to impose additional conditions or ban. Let me back up. They can impose conditions based on 275.5, but they can't outright ban. They can't interpret to suggest BESS can't be on EFU. So I do think it's irrelevant, even if the ordinance is just implementing an interpretation that they came to.
So you're going to submit, I'm sorry, Mr. Speckman, anything further from you?
I'll just repeat that their interpretation is that a BESS is not a utility facility necessary for public service. So their interpretation is that it does not fall under 283.1, and neither does it fall under 283.2 as a utility facility necessary for, or not necessary, but utility facility for power generation. That the interpretation is that power storage is something separate from being necessary for public service, and power generation, some other thing that is not yet defined.
Okay. So I'm guessing we're gonna leave the record open for a period of time.
Would it be okay if we broke for 5 minutes? I'd be happy to provide these exhibits and just confer for
absolutely
a moment.
Absolutely, that's a good
Thank
idea.
You. I'll provide these additional.
About 2:55, so that's a perfect time.
Okay, great, thank you.